Hey, so Independence Day, July 4th, freedom. Freedom is a big word for us. And so I was curious what Charles Fillmore, co-founder of the Unity Movement, had to say about freedom. And sure enough, I found an answer. And this is what he says. He said, "Freedom is the quality or state of being without thought or restraint, bondage, limitation, or repression, having a sense of complete well-being. It may be the result of regulating one's life according to principle and not according to what anyone else may think or say." Well, feels good to me. I love that idea of freedom from repression or limitation and complete well-being. Complete well-being. And I'm not going to say but, because but negates whatever came before it. And at the same time, we have to take stock, I think, that what other people think and say is enormous in our minds. It is enormous. There are just some things that get in our minds and we just can't seem to ferret them out. You know, there's that saying, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me." It's a great starter to teach children, hey, you know, whatever anybody else says is about them. And the reality, though, is quite often that those words, they do get in there and they do harm us. And you know, even though body parts can be fixed and replaced, even yay to that, but those external chains and external systems, though, are easier to break sometimes than those internalized and often unconscious thoughts that we have. You know, we hear often stories from adults that when they were kids, they were told they weren't good enough or smart enough or good looking enough. How many of us of a certain number of years still hear some of that going on in the back of our minds? And how many of us, regardless of age, are subject to comparing ourselves to somebody else? You know, because my brother was always better at X than I, or my neighbor is better at X than I am, or that sort of stuff. Or we compare. Somebody else makes more than I do, or somebody else has more success than I do. And when we start feeling bad about ourselves, and it becomes an internal chain that limits us and confines who we are. You know, or then we look at individual categories of folks. How many women have ever fallen party to internalized misogyny? Oh, because I'm a woman, I can't do this. Or because I'm a girl, I can't do that. I got to tell you, though, one time I saw a t-shirt and I loved it. I loved it. And it went something like this. I forget exactly what it said, but it did leave a mark. It had a picture of a little girl with pigtails with her fists up. And the caption read, "Back off, cancer, because I fight like a girl." And it's like, yeah, you go, sister. You go. Work it out. So I just love that when people begin to break free from whatever limiting thought they may have had or been thrust upon them, and they realize, like, that is not the truth of who I am. I'm bigger than that. I'm better than that. I'm stronger than that. Why? Well, let's look at the words on the slide right behind me. "For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." Well, this came from Paul's letter to the Galatians. And like all scriptures, I think, there is both an internal and an external application of the text. You know, externally, the question is, how do we use our freedom now that we've thrown off the yoke of whatever slavery we may have experienced in whatever form it shows up? And internally, how do we use that freedom when we realize we are not the names we have been called? We are not the limitations we may have assumed we had. So let's look at this term Christ from a New Thought context. We use it all the time, and essentially it is that of the divine in you, that spark of the divine. I prefer raging inferno of the divine. It is the ultimate truth of who we are. It is in every single person, even the people you don't like or respect. Truth is, it is still there. I know it's hard to accept, but it's the reality of the teaching. This Christ within, this Spirit within, is the great liberator of human consciousness. And it is freely available to anyone and everyone who is willing to release any of their fears or biases or any of the smallness of our egos or our personalities. The Christ within, the Spirit within us, is the source of our empowerment and creativity. Those things don't come from out here. They come from in here, inside of us. They may be reflected from outer sources, but the truth is they are resident within us from the time and the moment of our creation. Charles Fillmore went on to say, "We can never know the full meaning of freedom until we abide in Christ consciousness." And what he's saying, until we just let go any sense of our smallness or any belief in our limitation. Without prayer and spiritual meditation, he says, there can be no concept of spiritual freedom and therefore no demonstration of it. It is gained only through spiritual development, gained in long hours of communion with God in the silence. Liberation from bondage comes as we seek first the perfect mind of Christ. So why doesn't everybody just seek the mind of Christ? Why don't we all just somehow intuitively get, hey, you know, there's this living Spirit of truth within me. There's the absolute power of all the universe within me. I'm just going to go and let it out. Why don't we do that? Well, long hours of communion with God in the silence certainly does not align with our instant gratification culture. Let's be real about that. But maybe a larger and more serious reason is that people really don't even know that there is this living Spirit of truth within them. Don't even know to look within. You know, we are so accustomed to looking outside of ourselves for peace and satisfaction. And we don't know we have it all along. You know, this is addressed in an old Hindu legend that says there was once a time when human beings were gods, but they so abused their divinity, free will, we still have it, we have so much free will, we can even hurt ourselves with it. So people so abused their divinity that Brahma, the chief god, decided to take it away from them and hide it where it would never be found. So the question was, where do we hide the divinity of humanity so they won't find it? Brahma called a council of the gods together to help him decide. So he was very collaborative in his thought process. I honor that. "Let's bury it deep within the earth," said the gods. But Brahma said, "No, that won't do because the human beings will dig in the earth and try to find it." Well, then the god said, "Well, let's sink it in the deepest ocean." But Brahma said, "No, they're going to learn to dive and they're going to go get it." Then the god said, "Well, let's take it up to the top of the highest mountaintop and hide it there." And once again, Brahma, the ultimate naysayer apparently, said, "No, don't do that because they'll climb every mountain and they'll write a song about it. Climb every mountain." I digress. And they're going to go try to find it there. Then the god said, "We don't know where to hide it because it seems like there's no place on earth or in the sea or in the mountains where human beings will not eventually reach." So Brahma thought for a long time, long hours of silence, of communion with God, I guess with himself in the silence. He goes, "Here's what we'll do. I got a plan. We will hide the divinity deep within the center of their being. They'll never think to look for it there." And all the gods agreed, and that was the perfect hiding place. And the deed was done. And since that time, human beings have been going up and down all around the earth, digging and diving and climbing and exploring, searching for something they already have within themselves. This isn't to say human beings are bad or stupid. It just is a reminder that we always have within us and all around us that which we need. We just have to be willing to accept it and take the risk to do that deep inner exploration that is at times so scary for us. The Apostle Paul did. In his letter to the Colossians, he wrote about a very powerful thing: Christ in you, the hope of glory. This idea of Christ within, the living spirit of truth within, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's just a matter you recognize it. This idea is not new to new thought from the last half of the 19th century. It's always been there, and it is global. It is an archetypal idea. Our task is to take the risk to go within. A lot of people are hesitant to do so because there are these external standards of what makes perfection, what makes you good, what makes you right. And we're going to go within, or we're going to find those things that don't align with that. So what? Let them go. Let them go. So that the imprisoned splendor of the spirit within you can be revealed. And yes, it does take long hours with God to do so. Long hours of being willing to explore. What do I think? What do I feel? What do I believe? Why do I do these things? And yes, it's not always an easy process. And definitely isn't fun in parts. Oh, but it's worth it. Coming back to Galatians, this little book, we call it a book, it's actually a letter, six chapters. It has often been referred to as the Magna Carta of Christian liberty, written around the year 55 of the Common Era. It deals with the question, a very important question in the early Jesus community, about whether Gentiles, non-Jews, who wanted to follow the Jesus movement, if they had to become Jews before they could become Christians. Even back then, there were a lot of committee work. We still have that today. And of special note, and this is a stumbling block for a lot of the men in the group, was whether or not adult men who were interested in the new Jesus movement had to become circumcised. not really a popular idea then, and still isn't, as a matter of fact. So some things clearly don't change. But Paul says, no, you don't have to do the specific acts or the specific rituals. Faith alone is enough. But a concern in the early Jesus movement was, well, if all I need is faith in these new teachings in Jesus, then will I become indifferent to the plight of others? Meaning, hey, I got Jesus, and I believe, and I don't care what your problems are. It's, whatever. It's not, deal with it. That was a concern. That some of the ethical teachings of Judaism would be lost in the new movement. And for Paul, the answer was no. In fact, as a matter of fact, one's obligation to others would be amplified by understanding these teachings and following and joining the Jesus movement. Let's look at another line of text from this chapter, chapter 5, verses 15 and 6 through 13 through 15. For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law was summed up in a single commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If, however, you devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. What Paul's ultimately saying, with love comes responsibility. And his use of the term slave, and he used it a lot because in the culture in which he lived, a lot of people were enslaved, was very intentional. I think it's timely that we're engaged and enraged in parts in a national conversation about the lasting effects of slavery in our culture. In a related note, Paul's letter to Philemon, which is just one page, also in the Christian scriptures, is a letter to Philemon saying, basically, accept your runaway slave whom I'm sending back to you, not as a slave, but as a beloved brother. Paul was really clear on what this notion of loving one another was about, what this notion of following these teachings would lead to: acceptance and inclusivity. But let's not mask the enormity of the task. Still before us, as it has been for people for the last 2,000 years all around this earth. See, I don't think that in our personalities alone we can love one another unconditionally without reservation. Our personalities, our egos, if you want to use that term, are very often burdened with resentments and remorse and regrets and fears and ignorance that prevent and preclude us from doing this lofty thing that Paul has said, that Jesus has said, that the great avatars of faith all around the world have said, love one another. But lest we go down a rabbit hole, I just want to provide a counterbalance that in our personalities and our egos too are amazing strengths and capabilities and power and creativity, wonderful things that we use to create the amazing things that are a part of our lives. So let's be balanced in our reporting, as it were. But it is our practice of long hours spent in the silence communing with God that empower us to liberate ourselves and to release those unhelpful beliefs and attitudes and create new thoughts and new actions. Did I say that this was an enormous task? I might need to say that again and again. And did I say it was worth it? Absolutely. Anybody who has committed to self-empowerment work knows how rich the rewards are. Any community that has done any sort of healing work knows how rich the rewards are. Let's go on and see a line or two from chapter 6 in Galatians. So let us not grow weary of doing what is right, for we will reap at harvest time if we do not give up. So then, whenever we have an opportunity, let us work for the good of all, and especially for those of the family of faith. Let us work for the good of all. Ah, jeepers creepers. Did I say that's an enormous task? As we all have our perspectives and our biases and our desires, and to be willing to lay those aside and listen to the other. It's hard work. It's easy sometimes to take what somebody else is saying personally, but we don't have to. Providing sacred and holy witness is enough. Being willing to, that's the key word, willing to listen and share, sets up this amazing alchemy of transformation. If we're willing to allow it to happen. It's just like if we are willing to do that inner exploration, we can change our lives. And we do. We do it all the time. It's our stock and trade in new thought. So I'm not worried about anyone's capacity to work for the common good. I see it all the time. It is important for us to just do so consciously. You know, the internal chains we all carry manifest as the external boundaries of our collective consciousness. And that collective can be our family, our workplace, our church, our school, our friends, our state, our homeowners association, especially, and yes, our nation and the entire world. So we must become willing to mourn the effects of the past, our own or the collective, regardless of who made them. We just recognize this happened. It reminds me of the time I spent abroad in Europe as a student. My own family on my dad's side is German in origin, thus the last name. And I went to a lot of places in Germany and saw lots of reminders of the Holocaust. They were willing to say this happened and we did it. And we don't want to do it again. And let's, by the way, have the most powerful economy in Europe and move forward. You see, we can acknowledge our past and live with it and move forward. And as individuals, we do the same thing when we acknowledge, hey, I did this lousy thing, or I didn't do the good thing I should have. All right, I admit it. Let's move on. And in that admission, we free ourselves from it. It becomes a part of our story rather than that which motivates us. And I think we must be willing to engage in the work of reconciliation, regardless of who's at the table, unless to do so would cause more harm. I draw great experience, great wisdom, enthusiasm for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission from South Africa, from one I was a part of in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we addressed the race overthrow of the government in 1898 and the lasting effects it had on that community. There have been Truth and Reconciliation Commissions all around the world. Yay! Let's just say it so we can free ourselves of it and move forward together, better, because we've addressed things. We must be willing to work hand in hand for the good of all, regardless of who all is. And when I look at our nation today, we see a lot of affirmation of our divisions. You know, they've always been there. Perhaps by laying them out there, we can stop affirming we are divided and simply recognize we have different perspectives, different histories, different goals. So how might we therefore work together instead of affirming division, but affirm our oneness as a people who might have different strategies for where we want to go? We can do this together. The fact is, we have to. We don't have a choice. So let's choose to lean into it and say, with God, all things are possible. And see, all these musts I just elaborated on are messy. Yeah. And I wish it wasn't that way. I really do. But it is. You see, and personally as well as collectively, the process of coming to know ourselves as the Christ, as expressions of it, is never easy. But if it was easy, how much value would it be? It would be cheap. How much compassion would we develop for ourselves and others if we didn't have to work for it? So my homework, your homework, everyone's homework this holiday weekend is to take the holiday as a reminder of the work we have to do for the common good. You know, a tremendous amount of energy has been unleashed recently into our world, into our nation. So great, if that's the case, then let's use it for the good. It's messy, sure. It's that old unity term, chemicalization, right here and right now. But it's not against us. Unless we say it is. See, I'm choosing to look at it as, wow, look at all this energy now we can use in whatever way is best for all. I'm not exactly sure what that is. I have some ideas. So, speaking of the ideas, so when we get the ideas of how we can use this energy for the greatest good of all, then our work is to do something. Do something constructive. Do something creative. Do something powerful to liberate yourself and our world. After all, as Paul says, for freedom, Christ has set us free. All of us. Peace be with you and namaste.